So now you're doing this all NBA podcast with your podcast right here on the Almighty Baller Podcast Network. But when you do the team specific ones, all of a sudden you reach to different caliber of listener. I'm not saying it's a better caliber. I'm just saying it's they're different. They tend to be the listeners that get on team specific subreddits and go to team specific sites.
Emotionally involved.
Emotionally involved. Kind of irrational about certain players.
the type of person who might take analysis personally.
Right. And you really have to keep that in mind when you're talking about some of these players on a team-specific podcast, because they don't want to hear you say anything negative about Devin Booker, by the way. You know, the dude's...
Well, what would you say negative about Devin Booker?
I mean, he's a saloon door on defense. He has one of the worst defensive box plus minus... records in the league for guards last year. I mean, he's up there in like the bottom. He's at like 470 something, right? Like he's there with like Brandon Knight and things with when it comes to defensive box plus minus, or that being a negative. He's a terrible defender. He's awful.
Hey, wait. So what's your Twitter handle?
At Radio Tim NBA.
All right. I'm at Almighty Ballin. We're just going to jump right in. What type of guard do you pair next to Devin Booker? Because Eric Bledsoe, I think, is pretty underrated at this point. I think that people think that he's more injury prone than he actually is, but he's certainly not injury resistant, though. All that stuff aside, he's just not the long-term answer at point guard. And it seems like now with the addition of Jackson, you've got Booker, you've got Jackson, and you've got a bunch of big men. We'll see what happens. Point guard to me is this glaring hole. And if you're saying, okay, well, Booker's biggest weakness is the fact that he can't play defense, what do you put next to him at the point guard position to make that work? Like, how about this? Just give me an example of a player, the type of guy who you would want to put next to him that would be a perfect fit. Like, you know, Rajon Rondo. That's not the
that's
answer.
That's definitely
but
not
just
the
like
answer.
A comparison.
I would think it would have to be somebody that's a non-ball dominant defensive guard. If you were talking about trying to fix Devin Booker's liabilities when it comes to defensive end with the point guard. So like a George Hill, I think, would be a really good fit right there. That being said, is with the addition of Josh Jackson at the small forward spot, is that I think a lot of those defensive liabilities can possibly be made up for on the wing and not necessarily with a point guard. You know, the Suns do have a couple of other point guards. They have Tyler Ulis, who they drafted last year. They just signed Mike James to a two-way deal, although what I'm hearing about that is it's a bit more of a guaranteed contract. They actually aren't going to play him in the G League at all this upcoming season. But both of those guys aren't players that you can really pair with Devin Booker in the backcourt. So they definitely need a non-ball dominant point guard that can hit the three. And, you know, the Suns are a really bad three-point shooting team. So in order for Devin Booker to operate, you need to open up the floor a little bit. They aren't going to be able to do that with Josh Jackson. We'll see if they can do that with Marquese Chris. Dragan Bender, if he's ever the starting five, that'll be useful for spreading the floor. But the Suns have really got to improve on their shooting. But at the same time, they really got to improve on that defense too, because you can't, you know, you cannot have Devin Booker guarding a competent wing. I mean, he's the type of player... You know, like look at Golden State with Steph Curry and Klay Thompson, where you got to hide Steph Curry all the time. Devin Booker's that kind of player.
Okay, so you need someone who's basically a shutdown.
Yeah,
guy.
But I think you could fix that with the shutdown wing. You know, if you were to have a defense neutral point guard that was running the point, but you were to have an excellent MKG, hopefully what is a Josh Jackson elite defender at the three, I think that can really make up for some of those defensive liabilities. And depending on who you have at the four and five and how much switching there is and that kind of thing, I don't think you have to necessarily fix the defensive woes of Devin Booker solely through the point guard position. But I don't think that you can pair him with another net negative in that point guard spot.
What about a guy like Kentavious Caldwell-Pope? And he's not a point guard, but he's got some ball handling equity. And like you said, Devin Booker's going to be handling the ball a lot. And actually, in a perfect world, Josh Jackson also is doing a lot of the playmaking. I think it would be great to have Lonzo Ball offensively, someone who could play a true point position. I don't think that anyone on the Suns is a good enough playmaker to make a guy like that redundant. You know, if you could get a really great playmaker, then yeah, I mean, sure, take the ball out of Devin Booker's hands, play him off ball a little bit more. But you don't need that. I think you have enough secondary playmakers, tertiary, quinciary? I think it's quinciary. So anyways, yeah, original question. Kentavious Caldwell-Pope at the quote-unquote point guard.
No, I think the Suns were the worst team in the league last year when it came to assists. They really struggle when it comes to ball movement. Now, you can blame that on the point guard, although Eric Bledsoe, respectable 6 assists a game, and I think he moved the ball fairly well. I don't think they necessarily need a scoring point guard, but I don't.
You blame that on the coach.
I do. I'm not an Earl Watson guy, and I have to pretend to be on the Sun solar panel to a certain extent, or at least mute some of my feelings towards that. But I don't think at the end of the day that you can put two shooting guards out there, two combo guards, and hope that that works. I thought Ricky Rubio would have been a great point guard, that if they would have felt like they could have made a move to get Ricky Rubio, you know, he's only, what, 24, 25 years old? That would have fit, quote unquote, hashtag the timeline perfectly, and I thought that he would have been a really good fit for the Suns. And there's nothing wrong with being a scoring point guard, but you have to make the players around you better. You have to move the ball a bit. Your offense cannot be completely dictated upon pick and roll, pick and pop, pick and roll, pick and pop, constantly over and over and over and over again. And I realize that it is a pick and roll league, but at a certain point that just becomes incredibly predictable. I mean, you can even look at what happened with the Rockets in the playoffs, and how teams weren't guarding anything but the basket and the 3-point line. And you have to put a bit more variety in your offense for that. So I don't think that a KCP would be a player that they could have paired with him. Otherwise, they could have drafted a Malik Monk and then just started those two guys at combo forward spots and thought what happened. But can you actually win a championship that way?
Well, so I guess what I would say is that as long as Bledsoe's playing, you're not going to be able to have your young core represent how much there's a glaring hole. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. But look at the Suns last year, and we can, the Suns, to your point, although Eric Bledsoe wasn't hurt, they did rest him for a good majority of the season. And so the Suns just got done doing a press conference where they hired James Jones as the vice president of basketball operations. And they also extended Ryan McDonough, and Sarver, the owner of the Suns, had a quote where he said, "You need 3 stars, maybe even 4, and we can lay the foundation and sacrifice the losses to do whatever it takes to get there." So to your point, I think that the Suns organization, Chris, is in your camp that you need to lose enough games to get another high draft pick, because the Suns are going to be too good to really get that high draft pick with Eric Bledsoe on the team.
You know, really, you're either trying to win now or win later. And the Suns have a win later mentality. And so their players, there's only a certain amount of players who are actually on the Suns. Because guys like, I mean, Jared Dudley last year, like Barbosa, Tyson Chandler, they're not really on the Suns, because the real Suns is the future Suns, because the current Suns like aren't really a thing. Right?
Yeah, no, I mean, that's... I can't agree with you anymore, but I would say that if you were to take a look at the Suns salary sheet and you look at when these players are coming off the books, that you have Eric Bledsoe, who's done in 2018, 2019, Tyson Chandler, 2018, 2019, Jared Dudley, 2018, 2019, Brandon Knight, unfortunately, they'll probably stretch him. We'll see what happens with that, but he signed through 2019 through 2020, and those are really their veterans, the guys that aren't the core of the Suns that are on there. But if you look at when some of these rookie scale contracts are ending, it's right around the time when all of those players' contracts are ending. And so there does become a financial point in which, you have to have a certain amount of players on your roster. And you have to, if you really want your young guys to develop, you have to put them with a competent point guard. And if you aren't going to get that player through the draft, maybe right, you look at the agency later on or whatever the case might be. To that point, all of these players that you're talking about aren't a part of the core. They're coming off the books at just the right time when the Suns have to start giving these max contracts and whoever it might be to some of these younger players. I mean, look at Josh Jackson's cap hold in 2021, 2022 when his rookie contract is done. It's $26 million. You know, and Devin Booker, I don't know what his cap hold is going to be, but I'm sure it's going to be up there. He's probably going to get a max contract. Marquese Chris or Dragan Bender, those guys were drafted in the same draft class. They might not get the maxes, but they're going to have to extend or trade one of those guys. So they're coming off the books at the right time. But where do they get that point guard of the future? And that is tricky. And I think a lot of Suns fans were hoping that the Suns were going to try and pull a trade off with the Dallas Mavericks, who ended up getting Dennis Smith Jr., if I remember correctly, right? That's how I pronounce his name, Dennis Smith Jr.? Yeah, so they ended.
And by the way, I'm from Dallas. I'm glad we didn't do that.
Are you really?
There might not be any combination of two players on the Suns.
Really? Even the young guys?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, you must have been.
No, I mean, like, I think the Suns are. I think people have this weird thing about Devin Booker, who's, you know, Dwayne Wade just had a quote, right, about saying, talking about his future. People have this weird thing where I think that they see players react really strongly to a young star in the making with a presence like Devin Booker's, and they want to assert how smart they are by saying, well, actually, the, you know, he's not that efficient and he's not very good at defense and all of this stuff. Well, I mean, the really smart take to me would be saying, well, actually, just that propensity to shoot, like anyone who shoots that many threes and who puts up that many contested shots and continues to get playing time, the track record of guys like that developing into stars is very, very strong. All of that being said, I think that next year, probably in terms of rubber hitting the road, Dennis Smith Jr. is going to have a better season than Devin Booker has had any of the last two seasons or the season that he's going to have this year.
I don't know why I take such personal offense to this. It's not like I signed Devin Booker. But I mean,
I think I was just sort of defending him because I do feel like whenever people are just so hot or cold, I really do feel like NBA Twitter is hyper cold on him just because conventional wisdom would suggest that he's a star and some of the advanced numbers suggest that he isn't if you're looking at it on a very superficial level. So I was actually just trying to defend him and say, like, no, he's a star in the making. That being said, like, Dennis Smith Jr. is better.
I will tell you that when everyone uses the term star, that I don't give a damn if one of my players ever makes an all-star team. I want them to make an all-NBA team. You know, and like that's really what matters to me is as far as when you're talking about stars. So I hope that's what you're referring to, because, you know, it doesn't matter to me if a player makes an all-star. That's fan voting. So,
well, I think in terms of team building, the definition for a star to me is someone who's given a max contract and that's not adequate value.
I like that. I mean, well, I mean, that's what makes max contracts so valuable in the leagues. There's really two contracts that have the most value, and that's your rookie scale contracts and your max contracts. And in theory, because those players in theory are so outperforming the value of their contract, it's those weird $20 million contracts that, you know, tend not to make your team any better because those players are performing right where they need to be earning that amount of money in terms of production, as opposed to the amount of value and percentage of your cap that player is taking. There's a lot of players that get maxes that, you know, I think is a bit ridiculous. Otto Porter got a max. And, you know, that being said, it's a rookie max, so it's probably not that big of a deal. I think a lot of people are a little bit down on the Gordon Hayward max when it happened. But I see that guy and I'm like, man, he does not deserve a max. Or some people, and this kind of speaks to your point with Dallas, not to get off the Suns too much, but you have all these people that were saying Nerlens Noel is going to get the max. He's going to get the max. I'm like, he is a nice player, but in what world are we living in that Nerlens Noel is worth a max contract?
I mean, I think with all of these guys, it's a little bit difficult to me when you're talking about early first round prospects to argue that they can't be worth that. It's sort of rare, I think, for someone to just really make it clear over the course of their first couple of seasons. Like, Nerlens Noel to me is too young to demonstrably prove that I am not worth a max contract. Because if he wins a defensive player of the year or two, which he might, that makes you worth above a max. You know,
it's hard to judge because of Philly and how they misused Nerlens Noel, that it's really hard to see his value. And then when he went to Dallas, he was injured. So it was hard to really get a read on it there too, I thought. But obviously you watch Dallas closer than I do.
Well, and I mean, that's actually just referencing his sophomore year. He averaged over a block and a half and over a steal and a half.
Yeah, which is really rare.
Man, Nerlens Noel would be great for the Suns. And this is actually an interesting place for us to go. That's back to the Suns, but still kind of totally off topic. I just made the case that it's sort of rare for a guy who's 22, 23 or under and a first round pick. It's rare for a guy like that for you to be able to say, yeah, that guy is not going to be good. Or he's not going to be like a value guy. He's not going to be an above average player. I don't think Dragan Bender is going to be. I'm sort of confident in saying that. And he's 19. So I wanted to hear what you had to say about that, because I do think that that denies conventional wisdom and it sort of butts heads with what I was just saying. But I do have a thought process there. But first, I want to hear what you have to say.
I don't know that that's necessarily true. It depends on how they play him. I think if you were to look at the year that Dragan had last year, that when he first got drafted by the Suns, you know, like the youngest player drafted, he looked like he had that deer in the headlights look. He got injured. He came back at the very end of the season, played like six games or something like that with the team. And by the time that he was playing, it wasn't even the real team that he was playing with. He was playing with, you know, whoever the hell the Suns were rolling out. There's some D-League contracts and Derrick Jones Jr. for extended stretches of the game. So it was really hard to get a feel from him from there. So the first real Dragan Bender that we saw was at Summer League this year. I thought he looked great. He showed a variety of moves that showed off his versatility. I thought he passed the ball really well. But depending on what you need your team to do. So if you look at like Nicholas Batum, for example, he's never going to be that lights out scorer. But you look at how much better he makes Kemba Walker playing next to him because he moves the ball a bit. He can hit that outside shot. And that's sort of what I see from Dragan Bender. So it depends on the team need and what your definition is of an average NBA player. I mean, are you looking at Vorp specifically or are you looking at what the team needs?
I'm saying specifically as a starter, playing a starter's role. So here's my thought, right? What's the most important quality for an NBA center to have?
I mean, I think that that's ever-changing right now in the NBA landscape.
The most important skill?
I think so. I mean, you could say rebounding is the most important skill that you want your center to have, or rim protection is the most important skill. But then
right,
you can look,
yeah. that,
but then you
can
look at players
say.
Like Kristaps Porzingis, for example, who, while they are good rim protectors and good rebounders, that him being able to step out and hit that three makes him really valuable. But I don't really see Dragan Bender as a starting center in the league. I see him as a bench center and a starting four.
I mean, Channing Frye had one of his most prolific three-point shooting seasons for the Phoenix Suns, but was still not an above-average starter because he couldn't rim protect. And he was the best three-point shooting seven-footer in the league for like 5 years.
Let me argue with that to play devil's advocate. While he might not have been, the way that he was able to play with Goran Dragic and open up the floor for that team and open up the offense, that was Channing Frye was the reason why the Suns were able to get to win those 48 games. While they didn't make the playoffs, it would have been like the fourth seed in the East that year. And so you can say, yes, Channing Frye wasn't an above average center, but what he was able to do to the offense completely transformed it.
So Enes Kanter is a pretty good floor stretcher, a top five offensive big man, a top five offensive and top 10 defensive rebounder. Every facet of his game, every single one, except for his defense, specifically post defense, is elite. He is a superstar in every way, except for his unacceptable defense, right? You can always hide a guy like Kyrie Irving. For center, you can't hide a bad rim protector. It's just not going to be functional. So I think that it sort of stands to reason that having your big man, your go-to big man, your biggest man on the court at any given time, he needs to be a rim protector or he's not fulfilling his primary function.
If you were to look at Enes Kanter, though, it's not his rim protection that's the issue. It's his inability to guard a pick and roll, right?
It's really both. And I think that guarding a pick and roll and rim protection is sort of one and the same.
No, to an extent, I just don't really like the argument that a player can't be above average at the center position if they aren't an above average rim protector. And I think that's because...
No. Well, that's not the argument I'm making. I'm just saying that if you're going to be elite at one skill, rim protection is the highest value skill. Having a 99 in rim protection is more valuable to a center than having a 99 in anything else.
That's true. I just think that he's going to affect the game in other ways. But, you know, Bender, yeah, and into other ways that are going to be really beneficial for the Suns long term. But I don't think that he's the Suns' starting center at any point in time. I don't think he ever should be, unless the league goes really small. What makes Bender so attractive at the center spot, though, is when you have Dragan Bender, Marquese Chriss, and Josh Jackson out there, that those three positions can switch basically anybody. And that is going to lead to a certain amount of rim protection in and of itself, because players aren't going to be able to get to the rim. You're going to be able to cut off some of those drives and, you know, the guys out there at the 3-point line and that kind of thing, yada, yada, yada. So if you're playing a really versatile lineup where those three positions can really switch anything and guard three through five, that there is a certain amount of benefit that has to an offense and to a team. And don't we need to start looking at team fit you know, at some point, because Rudy Gobert would, you know, look at DeAndre Jordan, for example. I mean, he's absolutely wonderful on the Clippers, but is he the center that the Clippers need with their roster the way it's currently constructed?
I think yes. The question in that case is more, okay, can Gallinari be the three on a good team, as opposed to can DeAndre be the five on a good team? Because of course he can. He's been the five on a consistently home court in the playoffs Western Conference team for the last decade. But regardless, I get that argument, but then that also presupposes that he can go out on the wing and defend threes. I don't see it. I think that Dragan can't guard elite wings, certainly. And so if he's not a great rim protector and he can't guard elite wings either, and offensively, I mean, he shot like what, like 31% the last couple of years?
I wouldn't say the last couple of years. He missed his entire rookie season.
There's a large enough sample size.
I'm going to look this up because I have the Basketball Reference pulled up right now. Dragan Bender played 43 games his entire career.
Yeah. What did he shoot from three?
A whopping 27%.
Okay, so he shoots threes, but he's not good at it. He can't protect the rim. He can't switch to the extent that he can guard elite wings. He can pass, but he's not such an outlier good passer that you want him to be initiating plays as opposed to someone who is good, really good at it. You know what I mean? That was always my problem with Mason Plumlee for the Trailblazers. You know, they were always so bad because it's like, well, we have the center who's a pretty good passer for a center, so let's utilize that. But it's like, you have two of the top 10 offensive guards in the league. He's a pretty good passer, I get it, but he's not good enough. He's not good enough to warrant using possessions through him, because they're not going to be as good or as efficient or as effective as possessions used by someone who is better at doing that. That's why Damian and CJ make a ton of money. I guess my thing with Dragan Bender is I'm looking at him in terms of a prospect at this point, because I think he just turned 20 a month ago or something like that. And to me, he's not a good prospect. I'm not evaluating him in terms of who he is as an NBA player. I think that's unfair. Like projecting his numbers forward from like the last whatever 43 games or whatever. I'm looking at his skill set though, and his athleticism and where he could potentially go from here. And it's like, well, sure, if he turns into Kristaps Porzingis, then he'll be elite. But he's not. He's just not Kristaps.
No, and you have a point, like in the NBA, where you know, everybody's always going to you know, compare the white European center to whatever white European big is in the league. And I did it earlier myself, but you know,
with all of this stuff though, you are evaluating potential, right? And I guess my sticking point with Dragan is that, as far as I can tell, he doesn't have the upside so that the future Suns, which is the only Suns that matters, I don't see him being the starter of the future. Marquese Chriss, despite coming into Summer League and having a disappointing showing to most, still, the type of prospect that he is the type of guy who got picked in the top 10 in his draft class, despite just being bad in college. You know, fouling out all the time, 10 fouls per 48 minutes, being a bad rim protector, just bad at basketball. But he's the type of guy that if you just could take a floppy disk and install basketball skills in his brain, he's such a profoundly great athlete that his raw potential physically is like superstar. And there's no working around that. He can jump 45 inches into the air. He's 6'10". He's jacked. He's built like Adonis. You just eventually have to start seeing things from him. But he's young enough, though, that I still think that Marquese Chriss is worth betting on, even though I think that he probably won't work out. It's just that if he lands, though, he's the best player on the Suns, I think.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Right? I mean, is that just
Wow. I think that, to your point, that the Suns, they drafted two power forward / centers, depending on the way that the league went in the same draft class, with Dragan Bender and Marquese Chriss at the same time. The kind of the school of thought is, well, one of these two guys is going to work out. We need a power forward. And, you know, they probably won't have the money to extend them both at the same time. But between the two of them, they're both going to work out. And I'm not in your camp that I think that Marquese Chriss is, and by any stretch of the imagination, going to be the best son on the team. But I do think that if you have a team that has two or three ball dominant stars, that as long as you can get really quality rotational pieces out of the rest of those players, that that's okay. So Kevin on the Drive and Dish has this feeling towards prospects that if they aren't a star, that they're just absolute garbage. And I can never agree with that sentiment. For example, Robert Covington over on the Sixers, one of my favorite players, and I think he adds so much value. Nerlens Noel over with the Mavericks, I think that he adds so much value. Dude's never going to be a star. He is never going to be the guy that's leading your team to a championship, but that doesn't degrade his value at all, just because that person isn't a star. And it's about putting those collective pieces together, and it about getting above average players that are versatile. And I think that they have that, at least with one of those two players.
They certainly could have that with one of those two players. I'm, of course, making a hard line that you disagree with, that Bender can't be. And I think that Chris is super risky. But I guess my point with him is just that if he learned how to play basketball, physically, he's got this huge wingspan. He is ultra explosive. He's just built like he's built like LeBron, you know? He's just that total athlete package. He came in a little bit chubby into summer league, but just coming out of the draft, the possibilities there to me have just been always super compelling to me with Marquese Chris. And I understand the argument of people who are low on him, because I think honestly, in all likelihood, he won't be good. But if you're the Suns, you're doing yourself a disservice by not penciling him in there, because if he lands, and he totally could, he is just incredible.
Marquese Chris, one thing to keep in mind is, and you probably know this, but he didn't start playing basketball until he's, I think, a junior in high school. He played football before that. And so that's part of where his fouling problems come in, is because he's just not, he's not a polished prospect. And, you know, he was thrown into that starting lineup with the Suns, I think 10, 15 games into the season, when they replaced him with Jared Dudley in the starting lineup. And so he's definitely not polished, but, you know, to your point, part of the reason for him being so raw is because he didn't play basketball for so long. But I think that really what he can improve on is his defense, and is his weak side shot blocking, I think, will come in really handy. And, you know, can he defend without fouling and those kinds of things? And can he move the ball, and can he space the floor a little bit? I don't think you need him to be a 40% shooter by any stretch of the imagination. But if you can get him hitting like 34, 35% from the power forward center spot, depending on the lineup that they're rolling out, you know, I think that that spaces the floor along with, you know, some good team defense, and that he could be a really valuable player for the Suns. But the center spot is really interesting, which I think is why we're spending so much time talking about it, because you have Tyson Chandler, who's obviously not a part of the core moving forward. You have the Spurs, who kind of whiffed on that sign and trade with him and Jonathan Simmons. They just re-signed Alex Len to a four-year extension, $17 million, but that's definitely backup center money. And so they have this or not Alex Len, excuse me, Alan Williams. And so they have the qualifying offer out on Alan Williams, or on Alex Len, excuse me, for a little over $4 million. You know, he was a top four draft pick. I think out of the top 10 picks in that draft class, it only him and Nerlens Noel are the ones without extensions right now. And what do they do with Alex Len? And does Alex Len come back on that qualifying offer?
Yeah, I mean, hasn't that question been answered at this point?
Right? Whether or not he comes back in the qualifying offer?
Yeah, I mean, like, he's not coming back, right?
I would think if I were him, I'd come back on the qualifying offer. Otherwise, you're going to have him signed at the minimum on another team somewhere. And maybe he thinks that that is the best thing for his career, so he can get more playing time. But if I'm the Suns, regardless of whether or not Tyson Chandler is on that roster, you gotta play Alex Len some big minutes if he comes back on that qualifying offer, because you have to see what you have with this player. You have a player that you drafted. The minute that you drafted him, he's always been in that backup role. There was a little while where they were playing the Twin Towers lineup with him and Tyson Chandler at the same time, and that was just a catastrophe. But before you extend these players, and the Suns are going to be looking at that with TJ Warren as well, which I think is important because they just drafted Josh Jackson, you have to see what you have with these players.
Phoenix fans, say it with me. We are PHX. We are PHX. I want you to check out a brand new Phoenix Suns podcast called The Solar Panel, a Phoenix Suns podcast. Tim Tompkins, Greg Esposito, Dave King for a weekly Phoenix Suns podcast. You can find The Solar Panel, Phoenix Suns podcast on iTunes, on Stitcher, on Google Play, and sunspodcast.com. We are PHX. We are PHX.
Do you know what Carmelo projections are?
Carmelo, where he's projected to go?
Oh, okay. So Google search really quick, Carmelo NBA player projections. And listeners at home, you should do this too. It's a pretty cool tool.
Carmelo NBA player projections.
So it basically identifies players throughout NBA history and then forecasts based on their qualities and their performance what they're going to be going into the future.
Yeah, I can see how they would get these numbers, but this doesn't take into account somebody's work ethic, right? Or the situation that they're in.
Well, no, it's just saying, like, you know, at this point in X player's career, he had the same stats as Marquese Chriss, right? So, and then if you look at, like, the way that his career and his averages have gone up and down and his percentages have gone up and down, the trajectory that this guy's on has the same linear progression as Marquese Chriss, right? Marquese Chriss's main comparisons, Harkless is one. There's not much there because Harkless is not developed, same as Aaron Gordon. But Al Harrington, Cliff Robinson, Giannis Antetokounmpo, Marvin Williams, Derek Favors, Miles Turner, and Al Jefferson.
I mean, that's some good company to be in. I'm like, if you look at Marvin Williams, for example, and I think he's a really interesting player who later on in his career found a way to be really valuable. And he wasn't always yeah. that way, but he found a way to be an incredibly valuable player. And you can say whether or not you think he's an above average NBA starter or whatnot, but just the composition to the team and what he was able to do, especially in that contract year, was incredibly valuable.
Yeah, totally. Devin Booker, number one, Bradley Beal, two, Carmelo, three, Kevin Durant, four, Kobe Bryant, five, Tony Parker.
I've always really liked the Devin Booker, Bradley Beal comparisons. You know, when he was first drafted,
yeah, it makes a lot of
everyone
sense.
Always said Klay Thompson. I'm like, I don't understand why you guys keep saying Klay Thompson. He's much more of a Bradley Beal type player, I think.
Right. So, okay, we've already said that the Suns of the now don't matter. So, thinking about the Suns of the future, there's a few other teams that are in a similar position. I think the Lakers are in the same boat where they've got a bunch of young prospects. They aren't quite fully formed. I would say that the 76ers are not in the same boat because the Sixers of now are the Sixers of the future and all that stuff, right? But, you know, Lakers are in the same boat as the Suns, who are in the same boat as the Nets. Suns are better off than the Nets. I think we can agree on that. But what really needs to be fixed in terms of roster, organization, perhaps coaching between now and all of these guys' primes, like superstar Devin Booker, Josh Jackson, and Marquese Chriss, big three, for that to come to fruition, what needs to change?
Well, I'm not sure something needs to change. So the team, Robert Sarver, just had a press conference today at the time that we're recording this a couple hours before, where they extended Ryan McDonough, the GM. I think that was a really smart move. I think that Ryan McDonough's made a lot of really good moves after his first year with the team. I think his first year with the team was a little bit of a disaster, but he seems to have made a series of good moves since then. They brought in James Jones to be the vice president of basketball operations. I think that's really going to help with recruiting other players. After that, there's probably got to be a coaching change, but something that we talked about, I think, when you came on the solar panel, Chris, was you have a team that's developing right now, and one of the things they're developing isn't just the players, but they're also developing the coaching staff. And can Earl Watson turn into a coach that can preach defense and actually have it work? Can they run sets that aren't so predictable? You know, can he manage timeouts effectively? Can he run out-of-bound plays that actually get them buckets? Can all of those things come to fruition? I don't want to write the guy off so young in his coaching career. So if he develops, great. And if he doesn't, then they obviously need a good coach. But I think that when you're looking at these rebuilding teams, and I do consider the Suns a little bit closer to the Sixers than I do for the Lakers. And that's because there comes a time when you're rebuilding when you are only taking the best player available. And it doesn't matter what position you have filled, you always take the best player available. I think if you're looking at what the Suns have started doing is they started drafting out of positions of need. So if you're talking about Josh Jackson, where they really needed that wing defender, or if you're talking about Davon Reed, who they took in the second unit, who that 3-and-D wing defender. So they're starting to draft targets of need. And I think that that's really valuable. Their point guard situation needs to be worked out. Brandon Knight right now, who is on the roster for $15 million through 2020-2021, they could choose to stretch him. And I think that's likely, although there's a good chance that that'll happen in October, because I'm pretty sure that the way the CBA works is if they stretch him in October, they can pay his entire salary this year. And so that makes that stretch a smaller amount. Don't quote me on it, but I'm pretty sure that's how it works, and that's probably what they're going to have to do, because the way to get rid of Brandon Knight is taking on a really bad contract as well. Nobody's going to take a flyer on Brandon Knight for $15 million a year for the next 4 years.
I want to take a flyer on Brandon Knight. I think Brandon Knight has a role to play in the NBA.
Well, I think he is too, if he agrees to a buyout or he gets stretched and somebody will take him on, you know, a $5 million 1 year deal. I think that that's absolutely plausible. But to your point earlier, their position of need is the point guard, and they have Eric Bledsoe, who's a really talented, good player who, but frankly, just doesn't fit the timeline. He is a little bit injury prone. And they also have a couple of point guards that you want to develop at least a little bit off the bench. So you don't want Eric Bledsoe playing 40 minutes a game, not that he could really handle it anyway. So they're going to have to get the point guard of the future, but that doesn't mean that the point guard of the future has to be 19 years old. You know, I'm not sure what the free agent class is coming up or what the trade market is going to be for some of these different point guards that are around, but that might be a way that they can fill that without always looking towards the draft, because, you know, we talked about it earlier, but I think one of the biggest mistakes the Sixers made was never putting competent point guards around their players, so their players learned bad habits, and you don't necessarily want to do that. You guys with the Mavericks really lucked in with a super quality point guard in Dennis Smith Jr., who's, you know, looks like right now he's NBA ready.
You know, I think there's a lot of interesting things to be said about whether or not it's worth having a point guard or not if you're truly rebuilding, if you want to be at the bottom of the league, because a tried and true method for being the worst team in the league is just like, don't sign a point guard. You could probably remember that year that the 76ers had to sign Ish Smith partially through the year because Tony Roten was starting at the point guard position, and that was a travesty, and they limped to a record that was tied for the worst record in NBA history. So I think if the Suns really want to be bad, you can't sign a point guard. But I think the other side of that coin is that if you want your players to develop without a point guard, then you need a good coach. You can't be having a coach who is a work in progress. Right. You need a real NBA coach. Or you could have a point guard who can be a coach on the floor. But not having both, I do think, puts the Suns at real risk to be in developmental purgatory. And that's something that I'm a little bit concerned about.
I wouldn't worry so much about the Suns. You know, the front office has talked about the timeline, and they've talked about Robert Sarver at the State of the Suns meeting with Suns ticket holders a few months back. He mentioned that, you know, the Suns are really targeting 2020, 2021. You know, a lot of teams right now, I think, are looking at the Western Conference and saying, look, we can't compete with this. And not just talking about the Warriors. There's, you know, look up and down the Western Conference, and it's not a lot of teams that you really want to compete with. So when do you want to be a competent team that's really slipping into that 8, 7, 6 seed? And they're looking at 2020, 2021. So, you know, that gives them some time to where they can really figure this thing out. And I don't think that they need to rush anything, but I also don't think that they're necessarily trying to tank in the way that the Sixers were, where the Sixers are under the floor consistently. Don't have a point guard. They're drafting players that aren't even going to play for the next year or two, but that they're a team that's going to learn how to win through learning how to win, not who is going to get a high draft pick by consistently losing. As long as the Suns are rolling out their veterans 35 minutes a night, I think that they're in an okay direction to learn how to win with the players that they have now, while looking for a long-term answer at the point guard and possibly the coaching position.
I gotta say, man, you gotta be really bad for one more year. There's just like there's no yeah. Man, well, first off, it looks like I was wrong about this draft. I didn't think this draft was all that great.
Oh, it's so good. We were down there in Vegas, and I was watching these prospects. I was just thinking, this is a great year to be down here at NBA Summer League.
Yeah, no, this draft looks really great, and I thought that they were going to be bad, so go me. Well, not really bad. I just thought they were going to be not world beaters in the same way. I definitely didn't think they were going to be really bad. I didn't think it was a bad year. I just, there were some people, like Chad Ford said that, you know, this was like outlier, historic caliber draft. I think that's next year. And of course, I was just wrong about this last year, so, you know, we'll see. But specifically, this next year is going to be rim protectors who are mobile, man. DeAndre Ayton, okay, slide him into the Suns. Wow, beautiful fit. Mohamed Bamba, at my alum, my university of origin, University of Texas, he's going to be playing there this year. Mohamed Bamba is going to be the best center in the league who isn't named Joel Embiid a few years, like five years.
Well, I mean, according to NBA 2K, the best young center in the league right now is Karl Anthony Towns.
Well, I mean, Joel Embiid just needs to get his durability right.
That does make a difference, man. That guy, I'm so glad I'm not the Sixers, because I love Joel Embiid, but man, I don't want to be the one giving him a max contract, because you have to, but I don't want to be the one doing it.
I want to be the one doing it, man. You got to risk it for
no, that is so scary. The thankful thing for the Sixers is that they have Markelle Fultz and Jonathan Simmons, so if Embiid doesn't work out, you know, it's not necessarily the end of the world. And, you know, with the way that insurance works in the NBA is if they are truly, they cannot play, that insurance will take most of that money. So it's not a huge deal. But ooh, if they sign Joel Embiid to a max contract and that dude can only play 30 games a year for the rest of his contract, like, that's going to sink the Sixers every year.
Yeah, but let's say he is so injury prone that he never plays, and you do have the foresight to not give him a huge contract. He's just out of the league. There goes your title anyways, I feel, you know? If you want to be a title Sixers team, Joel Embiid needs to land. So, like, whether you give him the money or not, like, doesn't really matter. You can be a really good team.
And that's, there's some validity in that. I can't necessarily argue. I still don't want to be the one giving him that contract, though.
Well, you're going to be really happy next year when the Suns pick their rim protector of the future to play alongside Marquise Chris, who I still really hope is a future star, so that Dragan Bender isn't part of their long-term core, because he's not very good and you're wrong. But you're going to be really excited once you start looking at the 2018 draft and looking at all these big men. Man, I swear, who was like the top pick center in this draft? Was it Collins? Zach Collins?
I believe it was, yeah.
Okay. There's 10 centers who are better than Zach Collins next year.
I hope that he does get a good run. I always feel bad for these players that are drafted at these really high positions behind a non-positional need for the team, and they don't ever develop the right way. Derek Williams is one that I will never let go of the fact that the Timberwolves drafted Derek Williams number 2 overall when they had Kevin Love. And I think that just absolutely killed his development. And there's a bunch of other players that we could go down the list. I think that hurt the Phoenix Suns with Alex Len, who, as soon as they brought him on, they signed Tyson Chandler for some reason.
Is that going to happen with TJ Warren?
So TJ Warren, I think, is really interesting. During Summer League, he sent out a tweet that he deleted that said, there was a cold lyric that said, paint my name in the sky so y'all know that I'm still here. And so TJ Warren, he's coming up on a contract year if the Suns don't work out an extension with him before that. And I think likely that they won't. But he's always been in a position where he's been behind PJ Tucker the whole time. And he's finally in that spot where he's the veteran in that small forward spot. And he should be starting. But then again, yeah, the Suns, who just drafted Josh Jackson. But the Suns have got to develop TJ Warren, and they've got to see what they have before they offer him that contract extension. He might be the type of player who his best role is always going to be a six man, you know, and that's fine. I'm not sure that he'll accept that role. It might be a better situation for him somewhere else, but the Suns are in a tricky spot with that. And that's the thing about going through the draft year after year after year and being bad is, you know, look at what happened with the Sixers. Not to keep going back with them, but they drafted like 3 centers in a row, ended up killing a lot of these guys' value because they just kept drafting the same position over and over and over again. And when you're bad long enough, you just end up with a whole bunch of prospects. None of them are getting any good. They're just learning how to lose. And there has to come a time in which you learn how to win as a team and you get yourself out of the lottery.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and I think that a point you made earlier in this podcast was that as long as you're playing minutes, it might be all right if you don't have a system fully threshed out, as long as you're playing minutes alongside the core that you're going to be playing minutes in the NBA. So you're developing in that regard, and you're developing chemistry with players who you're going to be playing with down the line. So it's not optimal if that's all you have going for you. But if you draft three centers in a row, you're not going to be playing them all.
Some of them don't play at all. And then they get upset about it. Then you end up trading Nerlens Noel to Dallas for like 2 second-round picks or something absolutely ridiculous like that.
One of those second round picks, by the way, was sold for cash. So it was one second round pick,
and you know he was a lottery pick. But you did that because you were stuck on this. We have to always draft the best player available. Think about, for example, okay, so with that draft class right there, Ja went number 2. I think Devin Booker went 11 or 12 or something. 12, I believe, if I remember correctly. How much better the Sixers would have been if they would have drafted Devin Booker instead of Jahlil Okafor?
I mean, well, the real thing to think about is, what about Kristaps?
Well, Kristaps Porzingis didn't want to work out for them, and I'm not.
Well, yeah, but like players
do. What happened with the Celtics this year. Looking at it from the team perspective, if a player doesn't want to work out for you, and you haven't had enough time to scout them, so you don't take them, I can understand that logic, and I also understand the logic of best player available. But that team needed some wings. Like, if the Sixers would have found a way, well, they ended up getting the point guard that they needed this year, number 1 overall. But if they would have found a way to draft or to trade back, for example, and pick up a Malik Monk or something like that, I think that would have suited them really, really well also. But, you know, that's okay. They have J.J. Redick for $24 million.
They could have gotten Kentavious Caldwell-Pope.
That's wild. Wait, that team needed veterans, though. They do. You know, there comes a point in which you not only do you have to teach these players how to play on the court, and I do think there's an innate amount of value to that, but these are 19-year-old kids who are all of a sudden millionaires, many of them not coming from the best upbringings. A lot of us haven't taken numbers stand in line with that, you know. But you have to have people that can teach these people how to be competent adults. Because I don't know about you, but in my early 20s, I was a wreck. It's a good thing I didn't have millions of dollars. And maybe you could handle millions of dollars. But in my early 20s, I couldn't. I would have died. Literally, I would have died.
I'll tell you what, I don't know from experience. So, but... God, I've never loved that argument. I don't think you need one who's starting. Why not just get Amir Johnson?
Because why did they even sign Amir Johnson? Like, let's talk about it. As long as you're going to get a vet, that you don't already have 7 people playing the same position.
Okay, well, so let's see. What if they got, like, I don't know, J.J. Redick, except worse, to come off the bench? I don't know.
I mean, they could have got like a Corey Joseph or something, right? That would have worked as a great backup point guard that could have mentored Markelle Fultz along.
Yeah. But he doesn't have to start.
But it's not the worst thing in the world to have a vet in the starting lineup somewhere when you're starting everybody's like 19, 20, 21 years old.
Well, then, like, bring Robert Covington off the bench. Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, man. I recently talked to Mark Whittington of What's on Draft. He's also a writer for Liberty Baller, and it was right before Summer League, so obviously before Kentavious Caldwell-Pope said that he was going to sign with the Lakers for a deal that should have come from the 76ers, for fuck's sake. But anyways, all that stuff being aside, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope does everything they need. Kentavious is good. Kentavious is a starter in the league going forward. It's something that a lot of these young developing teams like the Phoenix Suns could definitely use. We didn't get to talk about Josh Jackson today. That's too bad. I'll have you on soon to talk about Josh Jackson. But luckily, the Suns do seem like, and you talked about this, I'm not sure if I totally agree with you that the Suns are done picking best player available, because their guys are hardly things.
I do believe that Devin Booker and Josh Jackson are as close to sure things as you can probably get. And that being said, Josh Jackson hasn't played a minute of NBA. But I do think that his skill set's going to translate unusually well to what the Suns need.
What I would say is that they're close enough that I'm not sure if I agree. I just don't really
know. Well, it would
kind
of depend on who that best player available is. I mean, if you have a franchise-altering player, I'm trying to think. Like Devin Booker, for me, for the Suns, for the fan base, because at a certain point, it also matters how many tickets you sell. That the shooting guard is probably a position that it would be difficult for them to ever draft best player available there. Apart from that, though, I think that, you know, one, four, and five, that they would definitely take best player available.
Yeah, yeah. And then next year, they're going to pick their five.
I mean, we'll see.
This time next year, you're going to be so hype about the big man that the Suns picked up.
I mean, I hope so. I want a Joel Embiid, but one that, you know, doesn't injure himself walking to the mailbox.
Mohamed Bamba, man. He's so fucking good, dude.
I bet he is. I don't...
You just need to, like... poke around this draft, man. Do it.
I will, but they got to start playing some games first.
The 2018 draft class?
Well, I mean,
why?
Don't you have to see these players on the court? The competition level in high school is not up there. You gotta wait. You know what I'm really excited about, though? I'm going out to South Florida. And if it's okay, we can end the podcast on this. But I am going out to South Florida to color commentate at the end of the month. It's called Big Shot, which is an underground, it's a grassroots league really comparable to AAU for 3 days in South Florida with Sports Radio America. And apparently there's going to be a lot of really great prospects out there, and maybe he'll be there.
Meanwhile, during the regular season, you'll find that point guard of the future, and then everything will just come together beautifully. Marquise Chris will be a future all-star. So, you know, I was going to have this podcast be the first in the off-season like team preview / season in review shows that I have, but we jumped all over the place, which is great because it's been, you've never been on my show, which is a guilt that I up until now have carried around my neck like an anchor.
Well, I mean, it's fine. It's not like just, you had Kevin on before me. That would have been insulting.
I had Espo.
Yeah, but
I
don't blame you for that. I mean, Espo is he's a talented guy that I'm absolutely blessed to be able to podcast with. And so is Kevin.
yeah, but it's a matter of best player available.
Yeah, right? And, you know, I get it.
Best podcaster,
I mean, here's
available.
The thing. If you're going to talk Suns, I absolutely understand why someone would be like, hey, Espo, you want to come on my show? Like, Espo's good. He's talented. He's funny. He's witty. He makes a lot of jokes. He knows what he's talking about. Don't ask him what coming off the curl is because he's not that type of guy. But he is incredibly knowledgeable when it comes to the Phoenix Suns. And, you know, he did work for the team, so he does have a bit of an inside track there.
Well, I mean, when I wanted to talk about the Phoenix Suns, though, I had my guest today, Tim, from Sun Solar Panel and from Drive and Dish. Find both of them at allmightyballer.com. Find Tim at RadioTimNBA on Twitter. Also find him. I think he lives in Florida. Don't literally find him, though.
No, I live in Riverside. Come knock on my door, man. We'll play NBA Playgrounds.
I live in Riverside, except in Austin.
There's only one real Riverside. Let's be honest. Yeah, it's definitely sure. Jacksonville, Florida.
I'll take your word for it. I don't really know. I'm not really willing to fight you on this. You might be right, unlike how you were wrong about Dragan.
I'm just saying, don't judge a prospect when he's 19 years old about what he's going to end up being. That was basically my argument with it.
Look, there were guys who announced for the draft who were not picked. All I'm saying is that Dragan Bender, to me, my mind, would not be a first-round pick.
Wild. He definitely would have been, but okay. Well, thank you so much, Chris, for having me on, man. It was great to meet you in person in Vegas. I got to tell you, next time, yeah. I'm going to take a red-eye flight out on Thursday night, get there Friday morning, and I'm leaving Monday morning because this Friday night through Wednesday in Vegas is wholly unnecessary. It was the time of my life, but I'm never doing that many days in Vegas again.
All right. Well, then, let's see. Well, then, let's just end it here.